step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
3, 2, 1. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. Join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. With our exclusive offer, go to manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z, for 20% off and free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. If you really want to make 2023 the year to remember, make sure to try out Manscaped's Wet Goods as well. This includes the Ultra Premium Body Wash 2-in-1 Shampoo and Body Deodorant. These products are absolute perfect for follow-up after your New Year's gym sessions. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BIZ at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says, in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Hello and welcome to the Business of the Business podcast. I am your co-host, JP Jabhas from the Two Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me is the wizard, my co-host, Mr. Lavi Marlin. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. While we're taping this, a lot going down with WWE and WWE stock and Vince McMahon, but plenty of people are talking about that. But we're honored today to begin with a special guest, one of the most dynamic authors and one of the best authors of not only pro wrestling books, but of 33 books covering a number of categories. It's our honor to welcome John Cosper of Eat, Sleep, Wrestle to the podcast.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you on. John, I talked to you not that long ago. We're talking about some of your books and what was going on the two-man power trip side. But just getting into you a little bit and getting some more knowledge about you, where did you grow up? And obviously that could probably tell what kind of wrestling fan or what you were a fan of.
You know, you would think that, but it didn't quite work out that way. I was born in Miami, South Carolina for a little bit, back to Miami for my formative years, which is the era of the rock and wrestling. So I was actually an A-Team fan, and I was a Cyndi Lauper fan before I became a wrestling fan. I saw these, them hanging out with all these wrestlers on Entertainment Tonight. My friends started talking about it, and that's kind of what got me into it. We moved to Houston for a couple of years, then we moved up here to the Louisville, Kentucky area, actually Southern Indiana. Been a Hoosier for 30 something years now, and I'm right here. Yeah, it was kind of towards the end of the whole Memphis reign and Louisville Garden. So, and I know it was on every Saturday afternoon, but I watched Superstars and I turned the TV off. I never actually watched the Memphis stuff. The stuff that I watched every day after school at that time, this would have been 87, 88, is ESPN had World Class on every afternoon. So outside of the WWF stuff, it was the Von Erichs, it was the Freebirds, it was the Simpson Brothers, the Dingo Warrior, Percival Pringle III. That was really that when I look back, that's really the stuff that I really enjoyed the most as a kid, I think.
Good stuff there, World Class. Very, yeah. Very good stuff. Yeah, you can actually go back and watch that. And sometimes you go back, you watch some wrestling, it's not as good. You can go back and watch that; it's pretty damn good.
You go back and watch, those girls are still ripping the Von Erich boys' hair out as they're walking to the ring. So
they were over like Rover here.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
they guys, the Von Erichs.
Kevin was always my favorite, and I'm kind of excited to see this new movie they've got coming out. So, but Von Erichs were certainly. It certainly always had a special place in my heart, I'll say that.
The movie's very interesting because you got current wrestlers that are actually playing, like MJF is playing Lance Von Erich, but then you got famous actors like Zac Efron playing one of the Von Erich boys, so pretty good.
Yeah, I think Zach's actually playing Kevin, and I saw him on set. Of course, he's all ripped up, and they got the hair on, and I'm like, all right, I didn't watch the High School Musical stuff. I got into him. I think it was actually Baywatch that turned me around on him. I was like, okay, this guy's really funny. So, I'm curious to see what he does with Kevin and what they do with the rest of them. So it's certainly an intriguing story. It's definitely a tragic story. You go back. There's nothing quite like watching that stuff from the Sportatorium back in the day.
Ooh, what a venue. What fans. I mean, they were awesome fans back then.
Yeah.
What was it about Kevin, even more so than Kerry? Because you mostly hear people like, oh, Kerry's a Greek god. You look at him, they love Kerry. What was it about Kevin?
I'm not real sure. I think the barefoot thing probably caught my eye. I think that was probably it, is, being 12, 13. Oh, that guy's wrestling barefoot, And I don't walk around the house without shoes on. It was just something about him, just the way he worked. And he was my favorite of the group to watch, for sure.
I was just talking to Ross and Marshall, and they're literally his feet are like hands. Like, he could pick up stuff, he could write stuff with his feet. Like, it's like almost like from walking his feet so long, they just became like another workable hand, basically. Crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. Can imagine.
And they said he's still shoeless. He's out there in the jungles, not jungles, but in the wilderness out there in Hawaii.
Certainly enjoying living it up. Yeah, it looks like. Yep. I'm glad he's doing well, and glad to see those boys doing well as well.
I wonder if he has anything to do with the film, like a consultant, anything. I wonder if he has anything to do with it.
I wouldn't know. I'm not for sure, but certainly I would. He's one that's always been a fascination of mine and somebody that I would love to work with. But I kind of get the feeling, and I've heard through different. So he's kind of tired of having to tell the same old tragic story about his family, and you know he's got his boys, and he's watching them do their thing with MLW and kind of making their way in the business, and you know focusing on the positive, focusing on the future. So you know, but. No, I don't know. I'm sure I got to think that they're probably involved in some way.
With you, as far as being, you go from being a fan, then you write in 33 wrestling books. How do you go from being a fan to you know, obviously amassing a ton of knowledge, but how do you go from that to becoming an author and start writing the books?
Right. Well, the 33 is actually encompassing a lot of the fiction that I've written as well. So it's still close to 20 books that I've written about histories, biographies, and things. Really, where that started was just me looking for something different to do. I've been a professional author for pretty much my whole life. I started out with the church youth group writing skits for the youth ministry every week, and that rolled into me selling youth, you know, skits to other youth ministers and stuff. And in the late 90s, building my first website, and with online publishing and everything like that, starting to write some fiction, try to make some forays into that. I was primarily a theater guy for a long time. I had actually gone back to school right after getting married to get my teaching license. I wanted to be an English teacher or a theater teacher or something. That didn't quite pan out. It's all about who you know, and in the education world, I didn't know the right people. But I was just looking for something different to do, and you know, going back a few years before I got married, I had a friend who had moved into my house and brought his entire wrestling library. By library, I mean VHS tapes, DVDs, and books. So that's when I read, you know, Have a Nice Day and Foley is Good and Heenan's Bio and Kurt Angle's and Jerry Lawler's and kind of got into really enjoying the history and the backside of the stories of wrestling. And it occurred to me at a certain point, I knew about Mark James and I knew about the stuff he had done on Memphis, but he hadn't done anything on Louisville at the time. And I kind of thought, well, between Memphis, between OVW, you've got a story to tell. And then I started doing some digging online, some Google searches and all that, and found some of the research, Tim Hornbaker and Steve Yowie and Don Lutz and a couple of other guys. I hope I got his name right. had done. And specifically, it was the story Steve Yowie tells in his biography about Strangler Lewis, about how he got his name in Louisville after no showing and then showing up 2 weeks later and having to change his name on the fly. So one day at lunch, and this is going back, you know, about 10 years ago now, I told my wife, it's like, I'm thinking about writing a book about the history of wrestling in Louisville, and she told me to go for it. So that's really where it started. And, you know, from there, it was like, okay, what do I do? So, you know, there was, you know, some research out there on the internet, but not everything. At the time, the Louisville Courier Journal was not online. So I spent a lot of time, you know, taking days off, going over to the library downtown, scrolling through all the old microfilms, looking for results from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. It was a lot of gathering different biographies and looking into different sources and also reaching out to people. Introducing myself to Jim Cornette at a comic convention, you know, reaching out to Kenny Bolin on social media and reaching out to other folks who were willing to give interviews. And that led to my first book, which was released in the summer of 2014. And from there, it was, you know, I started going out selling the book at independent shows and very quickly fell in love with independent wrestling. So my second book was really kind of just a look at the independent scene kind of in the Midwest at the time. And then just one thing led to another. You know, I talked to Kenny Bolin, said, why don't we collect some of your stories? And after Kenny Bolin, there were Lord Leslie Carlton kind of came along online. I met his daughter, and we ended up doing a story about him. And Bob Bryla, who used to be with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame up in New York, reached out to me about Dr. D. David Schultz. And, you know, after a while, people just started coming to me. And it kind of goes back and forth between people coming to me and saying, hey, you're interested in doing this, interested in working with this person, and also me pursuing the stories that I want to tell.
What was the official first name of the first book? Was that the Bluegrass?
Bluegrass Brawlers, yeah. And I just actually released it. I called it a 10th anniversary edition. It's, you know, kayfabe, but it came out in 2014. I started writing it technically in 2012. So, but I called it the 10th anniversary edition. We released it last year and filled in a lot of the gaps I wasn't able to just because I just didn't have the time to scroll through the microfilms. And now everything that's on the microfilms is all available on the internet.
Nice. Very cool. Bluegrass Brawlers. Good stuff. Like a great territory, great area for wrestling to cover for sure.
I always tell people the three big stars that never came through Louisville, you know, as far as the 20th century, were Gotch, Hack and Schmidt, and Triple H. If you look through the records, everybody, I mean, Luthez, Wild Bill Longson, Mildred Burke, Hogan, Savage, Austin, Undertaker, they all came through Louisville. There's some really great stories actually about The Rock in the new edition. And a friend of mine actually shared the story about he had gone down to Memphis, watched when he was Flex Cavana drop the tag belt in Memphis, and then come up the next night, defend that tag belt in Louisville, and then go to the autograph table and talk to him about, hey, I saw you lose the belt last night. And he was, I don't know what you're talking about. And you're trying to kayfabe him a little bit. Gave him that eyebrow. I was like, all right, buddy, I'll walk away.
Wow, interesting. So what's next? What's the big project next you're working on?
I just released Dean Hill's autobiography. Dean Hill is the longtime voice of Louisville wrestling. I met him back in 2013 when I was first working on Bluegrass Brawlers. He was became the ring announcer at Louisville Gardens in kind of the latter years of the Memphis reign. And then he was the television announcer. He was the voice of Ohio Valley Wrestling for 1,100 episodes. From the very, very beginning. And Dean's kind of been a fixture around Louisville, Kentucky for a long time. He was with the Louisville Police Department. He's played in a number of different bands around town. He has some great stories, not just about wrestling, but working security at the Louisville Gardens. He's got one of the funniest stories you'll ever hear about Ray Charles. He's got great stories about Steven Tyler, Ted Nugent, Barbara Mandrell. He's got two framed collages at home of all these old, backstage passes he has from different concerts, and you can see Hall & Oates, Metallica, NWA and stuff. And the one he always points to, the one he's proudest to point out and laugh at, is Milli Vanilli. So Dean's the one I just came out with. Gregory Aaron and I are still probably about halfway through his book, getting ready to start with another guy, not ready to drop the name yet, but it's one that people will definitely know, not just from televised and independent wrestling, but also has some kind of crossover appeal in some other entertainment areas. So I'm real excited to be working with him. And I do have some plans. I'm hoping the next couple of years to tell some more stories about the women of pro wrestling. I did Princess Victoria's autobiography. I co-wrote that with her. I've written two biographies about ladies from the 1940s and 50s that people, most people probably haven't heard of, but they're fascinating stories. Elvira Snodgrass was really the number two woman to Mildred Burke for quite a while in the 1940s. And then Mars Bennett's a really interesting story. She became a circus star. She became a pinup queen in the late 40s. And then she became a pro wrestler and unfortunately died very young in a car accident in 1957. But these were just stories that people that I kind of came across and was really interested in and wanted to bring those stories to light. And, the ladies are really underrepresented when it comes to the wrestling literature that's out there. You've got the kayfabe Fabulous Moolah biography by the WWE put out and the one of China's and everything and a few others here and there. But there's a lot of stories that really haven't been told and really haven't been tapped.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, I'll turn it over to Lavi. I know he has a bunch of good questions for you.
Oh, yes, of course. And my favorite, John, thus far, although I just ordered two more books, was the Candido biography. So what is it like to write a book about someone who has passed away, but having access to somebody very close in their life, like their brother?
That was particularly a fun one to work on. And I'll say Candido's the one guy I probably go back and watch the most of anybody that I've written about or written with, just because he had so much joy about him. Pro wrestling was his love. It was his passion. His brother will tell you he absolutely sucked at every other sport. There's stories in the book about how bad he was at Little League. There's stories about the book about how, you know, he would turn pickup basketball games into wrestling matches because he couldn't even dribble. But Candido just had so much love for pro wrestling. And that was a lot of fun to do because, you know, anybody who we reached out to and said, hey, you know, would you be willing to talk to this author? Would you be willing to share some stories? They absolutely lined up for it. And that was ECW guys, independent guys. Nobody had a crossword to say about him. You know, his family obviously was thrilled to work with someone who wanted to tell his story and do it the right way. I mean, you know, Johnny has spent, you know, he's spent his life ever since Chris passed away, making sure that Chris is not forgotten. So for him, it was an easy yes for him when I approached him. And have to give credit, Tracy Smothers is the guy that really kind of set that up. As we were working on his book, Tracy just kept telling me, you got to do Candido next. You got to do Candido next. And, he actually put me in touch with Cloudy, who put me in touch with Johnny, and got to talk to his mom, got to talk to his father, and talked to a lot of different guys from different promotions. And it was just great, you know, hearing the stories and you know, just hearing the love they still have for him. And every conversation, you know, it was inevitable. We would talk about Sonny and what their opinion was on the relationship and where they might be today. And also where he would be today, you know, in pro wrestling. That's the biggest, you know, ache that you get when you hear Candido's story and how it ended up and you realize how young he was. He'd still be wrestling today. You know, I mean, he'd still be in the ring somewhere. You know, would he be working with AEW? Would he be working down at the Performance Center at NXT? Would he have buried the hatchet with the Click by this point? You know, and it's certainly he'd be at one place or the other. And I got to think he'd be at the one place that would let him still be in the ring because that's just where he was the happiest. And, no, it was a lot of joy. It was a lot of fun to work on Candido's. As tragic as that story is to tell, certainly that one was a lot of fun to work with.
So I'm sure you are familiar with Scott Teal of Crowbar mm-hmm. Press. So one of the things that I noticed, you know, at least from your backgrounds or biographies, was you're both people of faith, of strong faith from your writing. And a question that I asked Scott when he was on the show was, you know, as wrestlers often have colorful stories to share. One of the books that he wrote was about Tony Atlas. And of mm-hmm. course, he has some well-documented, interesting lifestyles. So for yourself, how do you balance that in terms of saying this is for the reader, but might not be for me, and still maintain your own values?
Yeah, I'm telling somebody else's story. It's not my life story. It's their life story. And, you know, or whatever twists and turns that story happens to take, I have to follow that direction. You know, it wouldn't do to, you know, to shape a story, you know, in you know, my image based on what I feel about different things. My job is to tell Dr. D's story the way he wanted it told. My job was to tell Tracy Smothers' life story the way he wanted it told. Some folks wanted to share the salacious stories. Some folks didn't. Some folks used more language than others. Some of them, you know, used it up to a certain point, but said, hey, let's just blank this word out. To me, it's about, you know, being truthful, being honest about who the people are, telling it in their voice. If I'm working with somebody on their autobiography, and telling the story that they want to tell. You know, my life is different than other folks. We all have different lives. We all have different, you know, different beliefs and values. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, doing the right thing. And you know, the one thing I like to tell people is when I'm working on a book, I have one person to please, and that's the person whose story I'm writing, or it will be their family. So like, you know, going back to Tracy's book, the one guy I wanted to be pleased with it was Tracy, and he was. When I did Wahoo's book, the one person I wanted to be pleased with it was Karen McDaniel, and she was. And the same with Dean Hill. So, you know, my job is to represent them and to represent their families and to represent who they are. So, yeah, you definitely run into some things that you know, certainly, you know, people who knew my stuff from back in the day when I was, you know, writing for churches or, you know, knew that I wrote children's ministries might be like, oh, you wrote that too. But no, that's their story. You know, that's their life story and that's who they are and the experiences they had. And let's face it, you know, a lot of folks want to read those stories and, you know, whether I believe in certain things that are done and I would do certain things that are done, the stories are always pretty interesting, aren't they? So, you know, you gotta tell the stories the way they happen and the way they want them told.
For sure. So I remember, you know, mid to late 90s, discovering Amazon and being so excited that I could buy Arne Anderson's book. It was about 120 pages, if I remember correctly, mostly kayfabe, but I was the happiest person in the world. And then, like you mentioned, Mick Foley's Have a Nice Day book dropped. And, you know, although there are several wrestling books written prior to that, it's sort of like this whole industry was birthed. And I actually give the credit to Missy Hyatt first for her ECW press book, because it was like a semi-major publisher. And the book did really well. So those are the two in different ways that I credit. But how do you think the industry has really changed over the last 25 years?
Well, certainly the access that we all have now to the independent publishing methods, Kindle Digital Publishing, it's certainly opened up the field to where more people can do that. You don't have the gatekeepers. You don't have to go through a major publisher to get a book out there. The print-on-demand services like Kindle Digital Publishing and Lulu and all the other ones that are out there, Book Baby, they're all names are all is KDP. It's just made it so much easier, you know. I mean, and it's, you know, the good and bad about it is that anybody who wants to can go on KDP, you know, put in the title, put in their name as an author, put in a description, pick some categories, you know, post whatever text they want, you know, create a cover as long as it fits their things, and they can publish it. So that means, you know, somebody can go out there, they can write a completely fictionalized biography of somebody and publish it and put it out there for sale and say, oh, this is the true biography of somebody, you know. But there's, you know, at the same time, it's allowed people that really take it seriously, people that really want to dig deep and tell stories, and people that wouldn't have the chance to tell their stories otherwise, you know, to really get them into print. We did try to approach a couple of, you know, traditional, you know, smaller publishers with Dr. D's book, and some folks were a little gun shy about taking it on, you know, for reasons that are understandable. You know, I mean, if Dr. D does anything, the legal department at WWE is watching if they hear about it. Matter of fact, this is the fifth anniversary this month of when I registered the LLC for Eat Sleep Wrestle. It's not a coincidence Dr. D's book came out right after that. My wife asked me, could you please just go ahead and get an LLC registered just so we've got that buffer on. They never gave us any trouble with the book, thankfully. But yeah, it just gives people an opportunity to share their stories that wouldn't otherwise. You know, I don't think Dean Hill would get a look from a major publisher. I don't think Chris Michaels, who actually wrote his own biography and brought it to me to edit and to publish, you know, would be able to get in print with a larger publisher, you know. But he's got a story in print. He's got his story he can share with his family. He's got a story that his fans can pick up and read. You know, I think it's great that there's more opportunity and there's more access, and you know, it's really, and you know, and the fans and the readers, you know, certainly do a good job of deciding who does a good job, who doesn't. They'll call you out on things if you don't do something quite right. So it's really on you to make sure that you're doing things right. Make sure you got a couple of people that are going to fact check you when you need it. Make sure you have your sources lined up and everything like that. But I think by and large, you know, it's great the way that it's expanded and the way there is so much, you know, so much more available, and a lot of quality writers out there right now too. I think Kenny Casanova does a phenomenal job. I love anything Ian Douglas writes, regardless if it's wrestling related or not. He sent some fantastic articles on the internet about different stories, everything from Charles Atlas to the origins of Mountain Dew. There's just a lot of really talented writers out there right now, and people who are, you know, treating this as more of, you know, a serious study and wanting to preserve, you know, the real stories of pro wrestling.
So as an author that publishes as well, I love exploring the field. So one of the things that I always have in mind is, would I ever get to a point where it would make more sense to do like a limited print run to maximize the revenue per book, as opposed to doing it, you know, on demand, where it's safe, but you don't make as much per book. So has there been a point where you've looked at it to say, oh, Candido, you know, that'll be covered by X amount of wrestling websites, and I could go to X amount of shows, so let me print 1,500 copies of this? Or is it still just on demand, keep it safe?
For me, it's on demand. Keep it safe. I got a wife and kids. I got a nice house. We got kids. We got to pay to go to college and stuff. So I'm not going to go out there and take a lot of risks. For me, I like the on demand thing. I like that Amazon handles all that for me. I do have my website where I sell books direct, and people can get autographed copies. Certainly, I make more money when people come and they buy direct from me, and I would love for more people to do that. But as you can see, I've got my shelf over here. I don't carry a lot of anything in stock. I kind of just carry, I've got just enough so that at any given time, if I get a rush on something, I've got copies in hand. And there's some books that'll sit around for a while and I'll have a big stack of them for a while and then something might happen. And all of a sudden people are snatching them up. I knew immediately, let me go back a little bit. Earlier this year, there were a couple of people that I know who would message me and be like, "Hey, I'm going to be on the new series that's being done by the folks who did Dark Side of the Ring, but don't tell anybody." And then somebody else would tell me the same thing. One of those folks was Princess Victoria. And I knew immediately when her episode aired, because all of a sudden the next day I had two or three orders in my inbox and her Amazon sales went straight up. So for me, it's never been about limited runs. It's just about making the access for them. And the people that I'm serving primarily are the people that I'm writing about or their families, who brought the stories to me or have helped me to tell the story. So I just want to get it out there. It's available. It's what they call the long tail on Amazon. I've got a lot of books out there that may sell one or two copies a year, but hey, that's one or two copies, sold that I wouldn't have if I'd taken it down or if I'd only done a limited run on something.
What was the first wrestling book where you're like, "Oh, I really have something here," where you could see like the momentum was like kind of taking off? And which, and this might be the same book, which was the book that like really like, has over and above had the most mainstream appeal?
Every book you hit a certain point when you feel like, "Oh, hey, I've finally got a book here." And each one is different in how they come together. If you're working on a historical biography, there's a lot of digging. There's a lot of deep diving into newspaper articles. There's a lot of hunting on eBay for anything that might pop up that might be of use. Sometimes you stumble into the mother lode. I had a guy read a blog post I wrote about the Black Panther, Jim Mitchell. He sent me an email and said, "Hey, my buddy Dave bought the Black Panther's house after he had passed away. You need to talk to him." And I met this guy, Dave Marciniak in Toledo, who had bought Jim Mitchell's house as a flip 12 years after he passed away, actually right after his stepdaughter had passed away, who was living in the house. And he managed to preserve, letters and personal photos and documents. I had his divorce certificate from his first marriage, his marriage certificate from his second marriage. I still have his handgun, license, a number of things like that. But with each book, there's always an aha moment. There's always a moment when it just kind of, something kind of clicks and it's like, "Okay, we've got a book here. This is starting to come together." I can't remember any exact moments when that's happened with certain books, but it's always about, there's some editing going on. There's some arranging of stories or something like that. And things just start to fall together and you start to look at the overall narrative and realize, okay, this one's going to be all right. As far as which one's had the most mainstream appeal, I think certainly Dr. D's book is probably sold more than any of the others. He's the guy who did Slapper Around the World and John Stossel. After his book came out, he was honored at the Cauliflower Alley Club with their Male Wrestler of the Year award. I think that was a big one. The one I was really excited to see the social media reactions on was Chris Candido's. In particular, a guy who never, ever, ever breaks kayfabe, MJF, actually posted a photo of Candido's book sitting on a coffee table, which is something we had kind of dropped into the book. He had told his mom when he was still alive, "Mom, one day I'm going to be in a coffee table book." And so we kind of put that at the end, leave it on your coffee table is something he would have wanted. And people were taking photos of the book sitting on coffee tables. And lo and behold, one day MJF does it. And he goes, "It's not as good as mine will be one day, but this is a great read." And just hearing, from different folks, hearing from Chris Hero that people at NXT were passing around Dr. D's book on the bus or that Chris Candido's book was all over backstage at AEW. It seemed like every week for a while I was hearing, "Oh, this guy's reading it. This guy's reading it." That's always a good feeling when you hear that people are really enjoying the books.
So if someone is listening and they're working on a wrestling book and they want to pitch you to be published through your press, how would they go about that?
they can reach out to me via email if they like. Like I said, right now I've got a number of projects that I'm personally working on right now, so not necessarily looking for anything new. But I have had folks bring stuff to me that I've published that they put together themselves, and we just kind of put together a slightly different arrangement than we would if we were collaborating. Over the past year, I've published 4 books from Mike Rogers on the Pacific Northwest. His Excitement in the Air series, volumes 1 through 3 are now all available, as well as Katie Bar the Door, which is his history of Portland wrestling. Mike and his editor, Frank Culbertson, put those together. They bring them to me, and I've published those for them. And then Chris Michaels as well. You know, he was really motivated. He wanted to get his story out there, and he actually wrote everything out by hand. He had his son type it up. They just sent it to me to edit and finish up. So I have done some of those as well. I'm always interested in hearing from folks and seeing what's out there as far as, you know, when I can jump on something, when I can't. It all just kind of depends on what the opportunity is. But no, they're certainly welcome to reach out to me. It's johncosper@yahoo.com. Or you can go to the website, eatsleepwrestle.com, and go to the contact page and reach out to me there as well.
Awesome. John?
All right. As far as you were saying, Dean Hill, what's next on the horizon for Eat Sleep Wrestle? I know you kind of were hinting that something was coming.
I do have a couple coming. As far as what the next one will be, Gregory Iron is certainly in the works, and I've got a couple other projects. There's a great up-and-coming writer, Tamaya Greenlee. She and I are going to collaborate together. I'll go ahead and tell you, we want to tell the story of June Byers. She's the forgotten link in the chain between Mildred Burke and the Fabulous Moolah. Technically speaking, and I feel that June never actually pinned Mildred Burke for the title, and I know for a fact Moolah never pinned June Byers for the title, because Moolah put in her biography she wrestled June and she defeated her in Louisville, Kentucky. No, she didn't. Never happened. I can tell you that. But June's one I've been a Mildred Burke fan since I read Queen of the Ring. I think she's the greatest of all time as far as female wrestlers and one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, period. And to be honest, I had an attitude about June for a while. But when I was working on Mars Bennett's book, I started to see a different side of her and become more fast. You know, it's like, this is a woman who's been forgotten. This is a woman who... history is written by the victors, and it's written by those who lived the longest to tell the tales. And the folks who outlived June certainly did what they could to bury her and to diminish her importance in the sport of pro wrestling. And, Tamaya and I, both separate of each other, have been fascinated with her. And I've been sort of eyeing her story. And then I found out she was looking at it as well. And I said, well, let's partner up and let's do this, because I know she's got a lot collected. I've got a lot collected. And sometime in the next 2 years, I certainly hope we can get together on it and get her story out there.
All right. And of course, go to Eat Sleep Wrestle, right?
EatSleepWrestle.com. Yes, sir.
All right, John, thank you so much for all the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. My pleasure. Great hanging out with you.
Thanks so much. Take care.
You too.
Thank you, John. All right, Lavi, let's get to the news of the week here. I know, obviously, all the other, Brandon Thurston's the world and John Pollock's the world. They'll be covering your full extensive WWF Vince McMahon news, which is kind of going to be 24/7 for a while. I know we'll talk a little bit WWF stuff, but we won't talk too much about that. We like to talk about the other business of the business. I feel like all that stuff is almost oversaturated at times.
For sure. I think, and there'll be so many twists and turns even within hours.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to look back on. I'm looking forward to the Ringmaster book in March. I tweeted today the author, and the book is in good shape anyway, but it's so much changing all the time.
It almost seems like, oh my God,
another chapter or something.
I feel like that book might need to come out in like June or something, because he's going to have to change a lot of stuff with everything that's going on. Just nuts, that world over there at WWE right now.
For sure. But one of the biggest stories coming out of a WWE story is, of course, Mercedes Moné.
Yep.
Debuting or first appearing with New Japan. So New Japan, what a difference a few weeks make, although this wasn't necessarily a surprise at their January 1st show. But, you know, thinking about it from a U.S. perspective, you know, they've become a player again in the U.S. live events business, right? Like we had talked about some of their attendances, and it looked like they were finding their way. Maybe it would be sub 1,000 seat venues, but charge a lot. Maybe that was the best way to go, but maybe they can still do mid-sized arenas now. In looking at Ticketmaster and with the help of WrestleTix as well, as of last count, the show in the San Jose Civic venue had sold, you know, almost 1,953 seats in a I'm a little bit off with my writing here. Okay, I have an extra one. 1,953 seats, 199 seats available in a 2,152 setup venue. However, we'd been talking about this a while. The ticket sales were really slow, and as soon as they announced her name, it wasn't a sellout like they were talking about on New Japan, sort of in hyping it up. But the ticket sales really picked up. She's a ticket seller. And like I said, give her the steak, not the pizza. A famous line from her interview with
Stone Cold. You know,
yeah, with Steve Austin on his podcast and show. And then they announced two major events as well. Or one, they'll be returning to the Capitol, Washington, D.C., the D.C. Sports and Entertainment Center that they've been in, a few thousand seats. And then, of course, the 2300 Arena. So the 2300 Arena show is actually a pay-per-view. So although it would be a small venue, I'm not sure if she would be there. D.C., she'd be important for selling tickets, but, you know, that's all up in the air. I think one of the questions, though, is, you know, is she going to AEW right away? There's this, you know, talk about mystery partner. Maybe by the time you hear this, it had been Toni Storm announced. Maybe that's a swerve or something like that. So I think, you know, for New Japan, certainly, if she doesn't go to AEW or she waits to go to AEW a little while and they have her exclusively for some time, that would be like really something they can utilize to remain relevant and be one of the only promotions that can draw for big shows over 2,000 fans a show.
What do you think about just her Wrestle Kingdom in general? Did you like the debut?
I did watch the full clips. They were being posted on Facebook by whomever. But I wasn't sure what to make of it. It was like almost like being too cocky in a way that wasn't believable. I'm not sure if she was being herself, but she didn't lose. Like, she definitely came out as a huge star. Very curious to see what she does. I think she was certainly basking in the moment. So nothing wrong with it, but like, it just seemed a little bit of another time. It didn't seem like the most believable experience, because I think she is a nice person, and, you know, a lot of heels can certainly be nice people, but like, she was being cocky, but like, it seemed like a little bit disingenuous, if that makes sense.
What was going on with New Japan World with all this? I know this was a pretty damn good as far as people actually watching the show and signing up for it, but there was actually, were there issues with New Japan World?
Yeah, so I don't know if it was specifically this show. I know they did really well. New Japan had announced about 93,000. People were watching it live with about 30% coming outside of Japan for the English language program. And remember, in America, that was at like 3 to 6 in the morning, something like that. So really impressive there. We don't know how many total, but a good point somebody made on Twitter, Henry Cassie, who wrote, New Japan World signup has always been the true gatekeeper, and CHOB 316, and I'm going to paraphrase here, real amateur stuff in New Japan World signup process. The URL to confirm is broken, and you have to delete some excess HTML. So it's always seemed like especially complicated with like New Japan. And before there was AEW, it was sort of like almost a challenge. You want to feel accomplishment. Like, I got through it. I figured out how to order merchandise because I translated the page and I did this and that, or I did a roundabout way and I was able to get access. So that works for some people, but for most people, that's like a barrier where they give up and you don't want to make it too complicated. And then this is in any sort of business. Like, for example, my daughter found like an arts and crafts magazine from the UK, in Barnes and Nobles, and I want to order it for her in the US to subscribe. And it's like, you have to find who's their U.S. Distributor. And then I went, it was like a whole process to sign up. And then they're like, okay, put in your Visa or MasterCard. I'm like, I have American Express and Discover. So what do I do? So now I have to like find some time to call them and whatever. Like most people give up in this process, especially if you're like an underdog in the market. You have to make the process of getting from interest to sale as, you know, uncomplicated as possible.
Definitely, for sure. So as far as New Japan, was that it on the New Japan stuff as far as the shows and stuff? Okay. So let's talk about WWE then, because it kind of coincides just a little bit with the Japanese in nature here, because we're kind of opening up the borders, so to speak, with, under Triple H. Who knows about under Vince? But Great Muta wrestled Shinsuke Nakamura, who's under WWE contract. What's going on with the latest with maybe some borders being opening for WWE, or maybe they're closing?
Yeah, no, and it, right, it really is context with Vince, right, as they're trying to do more things with Triple H. It's been acknowledged he's been a fan of a lot of styles of wrestling, and Nakamura had said it's this match wouldn't have occurred if Vince was still in charge. But there is something to being in full control of your talent and your product and how it's represented. I don't think this is carried over to WWE at all, but it's a reminder to be careful who you play with. So Nakamura wrestled Great Muta, of course, and I think it was Noah. Yep. And at the end of, like, when Muta was giving an interview afterwards, he used the most derogatory phrasing for somebody that's gay for Nakamura in a joke. So understandably, you know, the media picked up on it and, you know, noted the offense, and I do as well. And that's just, you know, something like, if something like that ever happened in WWE on camera, then, you know, that person would be fired and there'd be apologies issued and so on. And I don't know what happened, you know, in Japan, and, you know, it's Great Muta's last match. So, but just by having your own talents involved, not your fault at all, not Nakamura's fault at all, but just sending your talent as WWE there when you'd be super, super careful of controlling things, it opens the borders for opportunity, but also opens the borders for controversy. You know, how does it affect the fans, advertisers, and so on? I think this time there, it's not going to affect them at all. There's a lot of Vince McMahon stories everyone's talking about, but it just shows like working with everyone isn't always better.
So obviously there's some news that maybe Muta might be in the Royal Rumble. That's been out there due to like maybe the trade-off, if you will, of letting Nakamura do that, then he would be in the Rumble. We'll see if that comes to fruition, if an event is involved. Let's really see if that comes to fruition. It may not, but that rumor is out there for the Great Muta.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. And I'm wondering if something like this makes it like, let's leave that, you know, alone. I'm sorry. We'll make it up to you a different way, because you almost like have avoided the story. But then if you employ that person, you know, then sometimes you have to account for that. Look at, I don't want to assign it to the wrong person. Was it Jay or Mark Briscoe that had tweeted, you know, inappropriate things almost 10 years ago? Jay Briscoe, almost 10 years ago now, right? Yeah. And look, he can't even get on TV with the Turner networks. So, you know, you have to be, from a corporate perspective, you have to be careful in that way.
So moving on a little bit here, what's going on with the NWA? What's the latest?
Yeah, so pretty big, I don't know if you call it a step back, but something that obviously from an outsider, it looks like things didn't go as well as they'd hoped with Fight, meaning that, right, they had this subscription model on their own, NWA Plus or whatever it may be, where you can subscribe, you'll get the weekly shows first, you'll get the pay-per-views and so on. And now they're saying we're going back to YouTube. NWA is making bold changes to allow our television programming to be available to the largest international audience. We're proud to announce immediately NWA Power will return its first run programming on YouTube and USA will remain airing on Saturdays as well. Pay-per-view programming will still be available through Fight Plus. First run programming will begin Tuesday, January 3rd, so that's already occurred. Include matches will determine the teams that will head to the championship series. I want to thank our viewers who use Fight's monthly or annual subscription service to enjoy our product, said Billy Corgan. Making the switch to having the world be able to watch Power at the same time is essential to our growth strategy going forward. Fight has an important partner. We're happy to continue our relationship with Fight as our pay-per-view provider. So it didn't work. I'd imagine the lines would have been open to them to port over to Fight Plus. But here they're back on YouTube and they can't seem to get better distribution. So Corgan, as he's talked about publicly, he considered during the pandemic just shutting down. Now we see Kerry Morton, didn't resign. I don't know if he was offered. Carino didn't resign, but they've been staffing up also, which is great to see people have full-time jobs. We know Aldis left, so I don't want to make it seem like it's bleak, but it's really up to Corgan. We don't know if there's profit or loss, but I think it's sort of like, what momentum does he see? And we know based on, having run a past pro wrestling promotion out of Chicago, right? Like, he's not just going to spend all of his money or even a part of his money on something that he doesn't see is running successfully. So right now it's chugging along. I don't see the positive momentum. So it's something to watch. Another note is the Nuff Said pay-per-view in Tampa. The Observer had the location, which is the Egypt Shrine Center. That's been a location for pro wrestling in the past. I think when WrestleMania was in Florida, it's a small venue that's nice looking venue that looks more like for like a banquet or something. That would be a few hundred people.
What's going on with GCW? Speaking of NWA, what's going on with GCW?
Yeah, so sorry, I misspoke. So Kerry Morton had resigned with the NWA. I apologize for that. But meaning that like once that's over, I think once he graduates, then he plans to pursue other opportunities from an interview. So apologies for the misspeak on that. But he did defend the title on GCW's Atlantic City show. So it's nice to see that collaboration, like, of options for the NWA. I think running with GCW, you could do a lot of interesting things there, like we've talked about, just because, like, on its face, they're sort of the polar opposites of each other. Atlantic City, something to note was that the ticket sales, at least in advance, they did not look like they went well. The first night, was the third row was still available just a few hours before, and the day prior, the second row was available for night two.
Ah, okay, interesting there. So what is up with Impact Wrestling? I know they've got some stuff coming on, including Flair's last match being able to be broadcast by them.
Yeah, they caught me by surprise there. And listening to mostly these days, I catch Jarrett's podcast every week. Most of the time I catch Bischoff. So especially on Jarrett's podcast, which makes a lot of sense, they talk about Impact Plus, which is a great sponsorship if there's a formal agreement there, which it seems like there would be. And now that Impact has Nature Boy's last match, which seems like a smart acquisition for them, depending on what they can do with that footage, they even have, some of Flair's last matches and appearances, of course, in Impact as a active wrestler after his retirement. Whatever you think about those matches, there's something interesting you can do with a documentary. I didn't realize before they have some New Japan content as well. The Super Juniors programming, and I think their the Fight programming also is available on Impact Plus. So interesting to see, like, I thought they were getting a little bit quieter in terms of the Impact Plus, but look, they come out with a high profile acquisition, so it'll be curious to see what they end up doing with it.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating, like, be able to get other promotions, other programs on there. That'd be kind of cool.
They've flirted with it a little bit. They've had independent wrestling before. I think they've had Defy. They've had our friends at Catalyst before, but it's never been like a big, like they never went all in on it, like certainly like an IWTV or a Fight. With that, it was sort of like neither here nor there with some of the other promotions.
So what's up with Triple A? What's going on with Vikino?
Yeah, so finally, I'm not sure if it's his first time on Fight because Triple A has streamed many times, but since like announcing his appearance on the US, he was on Fight on the special that aired on December 28th, around the same time as AEW, and a show that was more remembered for FTW and of course different movements with WWE and so on.
So he's allowed on certain streams but not on others, basically.
Yeah, so this one, like, you know, since he's AAA talent first, that he'll always be on AAA. But he'd been sort of like restricted from Fight Plus with GCW and so on. So it's still like a little bit confusing to figure out, like, because he's on Defy on Demand here through AAA, he's on Fight Plus. So it's still up in the air exactly how it's seemingly how they want to use him, like as a draw.
So what's going on with your buddy, your good friend, David Bixenspan and IWTV?
Yeah, so interestingly, like it looks like through Restival, they had some good buzz throughout the weekend. Luis Perez, our friend and former guest, has been tweeting about it a lot as well. From some pictures that I saw in this hall, it looked pretty packed. Interesting comparison to GCW, which was in a much larger venue. But Bixenspan said, of the new IWTV champion, I like Tremont, but just how much better are those deathmatch streams doing than the IWTV belt being built around deathmatch guys is clearly a thing right now. Seriously, how many orders of magnitude better? So IWTV, I think, you know, given the competition and so on, is searching for what they are. And maybe in terms of putting to the forefront what they are is death matches. I think they do, when you go to their website, it shows you like what's popular now. So the ICW New York stuff, which is a deathmatch federation, is always like towards the top there. Everyone knows Matt Tremont. So I think they're still sort of like searching for the answer is so much like competition coming and so much transition.
And you got Premiere coming. You've got Fight. I mean, IWTV has a lot of competition.
Yeah, and like we talked about the tweets about how much IWTV content providers are being paid seem low, or there was the allegation that some people might even owe money to IWTV because of spending money on production. I don't know about that, but I think they have to find their place.
What about AML? We haven't talked about them much on the show. What's going on with AML?
Yeah, out of North Carolina, they have a great article on Yes Weekly sort of talking about, is there, are the territories still around, which is like, or, you know, is there rebirth of the territories, which kind of was the question before AEW, and then we weren't sure. So it seems like, according to this, yes, there's different pockets. Another time-tested formula that AML Wrestling successfully followed was to take their show on the road and create their own territory. In 2022 alone, they had events in Winston-Salem, Kernersville, Gastonia, Salisbury, Hickory, and Goldsboro, to name a few. We didn't start traveling by design. We did it out of necessity. No one knew us in the beginning. It was difficult to find venues that rent us, so we went where we could. It worked out, so we kept doing it. Fan says, I've been following AML since their first show 8 years ago. Even back then, when they were only doing 100 of us watching, we knew that AML was something special. Now we have to buy our tickets early, especially if we want ringside, because of their shows sell out. It starts like FTR and Brian Cage and Arn Anderson. It's easy to see why. The stars are cool, but it's their full-time roster that I come to see every month.
What is Tomahawk Wrestling? So, what is that?
Yeah, so an independent promotion, and recently noticed it because they were having Jazz and what's his name? The Worm, the guy that does the Worm.
Scotty Tuhati?
Sky Too Hottie. They'll both be on the card. But to be clear, Sky Too Hottie will not be wrestling Jazz. He's very clear about that. No intergender wrestling for him. Yes. It actually took him off Twitter because people got so mad about that. But and the reason that I note them is that we don't always hear about pro wrestling attendances that are over 1,000 for independent promotions that aren't Lucha. So in a local article several months ago, September 17th, 1,200 wrestling fans poured into the Pitzer Garrison Convention Center to enjoy the latest event. Climax of the night was a lockdown steel cage match featuring multiple wrestlers.
Interesting. All right. So what about Dana White? I know we don't talk about him much on the show. What's up with him?
Yeah, so this started out as one story, and then when the Vince broke, maybe it's something a little bit different. So for years, people were, I think mainly Dave Meltzer was like, Vince McMahon can't leave. Wall Street has no confidence in him, in a successor, especially from his family, not Triple H and so on. And then he left, and the stock did really well. Now we see he's coming back, and the stock is popping huge. So
yeah, oh my God, yeah, yep.
But Dana White, of course, was caught on camera first. He and his wife were at a nightclub in Mexico, and it was on TMZ. You'd have to watch the video, but I think first she slapped him, then he slapped her twice, and so on. So people were getting nervous because he's the face of the UFC, and Endeavor, you know, it's one of Endeavor's most successful ventures, their corporate owner. So their stock was actually dropping. So the interesting comparison was that Dana White was sort of the realization of what people were worried about when Vince McMahon would step down, which didn't happen.
So Dana White is Slap League or whatever that is. That still happening?
So they definitely bumped it a week. From what it seems now, it'll air the next week, but people have looked at TV guides and it doesn't look like it. So maybe if it happens, it'll be at least 1 week late, maybe a few weeks late, maybe never. So that'll be something interesting to watch. I just can't see why they would bother airing something like this. Just take the loss. Don't air something like this. It'll embarrass advertisers. It's not classy or good fit. It shouldn't even be on TBS. So that would be my suggestion. Curious to see what happens.
Let's talk about Premiere. What's going on with them? What's the latest?
Yeah, so we hope to talk a lot of more Premiere soon as well, but they continue their acquisitions. The ECWA library, of course, that includes the Super 8. Their whole catalog is coming to Premiere, and they're also working with podcasts, Bobby Fish joining as well, so they continue to build their war chest.
Yeah, they got WrestlePro. Yeah, it looks like they're building up quite nicely over there. So what's going on with Championship Wrestling presented by CarShield?
So two things. One is that their place in LA, which is a comedy club, you know, it's a sellout. They're doing really well every time they tape there. So they found their place. And in Arizona, they have a live event coming to a stadium, but like I think it's like the pickleball court, something like that. So a smaller element there, but some big names that they're adding each show. But I did watch their last match. I think it was the last show of the year, which was a championship match. And like the show was like so much better produced. Like the fans were engaged. It was just really interesting storyline. So interesting to see as like probably the second best syndicated pro wrestling show after WOW to see, you know, how they're doing.
What about WrestleCon?
Yeah, so their shows over WrestleMania weekend will be at the Globe Theater, which everyone knows for PWG, which can hold around 600. I think a smart move by WrestleCon. Also, you see GCW is just doing it at the Ukrainian Culture Center, their usual venue. Like, if you have in a small venue and you run multiple shows, I think you can do well. But the days of like a Ring of Honor booking a 4,000, 5,000 seat venue and doing really well there are over unless Khan decides to do that, which seems like something he might be considering.
Wow, really?
Yeah, somebody asked him about running WrestleMania weekend, and for AEW, he's like, no, you know, we're not going to do that. But for Ring of Honor, he said that's something that I would consider.
Wow, okay, interesting. I know, obviously, they were going to book Johnny Ace, Johnny Laurinaitis, but now he's been poll due to negative response. So Johnny Ace will not be at WrestleCon.
So the promoter that I heard about where it was a controversy was the in Chillicothe, Ohio, Bobby Fulton's Big Time Wrestling, where he said, yeah, the response was just too negative. So sorry about that.
Yeah. So finally, let's talk about MLW. What's going on with MLW?
Yeah, just a little note in the Observer that, you know, their first program was called Underground, which they actually aired some of it, I think, during the pandemic, sort of to meet the BN Sports obligations or to produce some content, but that they're looking to, I guess, sell that as a limited run series. So, you know, why not? If you have the content, I think it's engaging. One of my friends is actually on those shows when Candido wrestled Terry Funk, like he made his way to the front row where he's kind of jumping around in the background. So it'd be cool to see that air again somewhere.
All right. Nice. So I guess that's it for this week. I know it's a very, very busy week as far as all the other things in the world, but I think a lot of people are focusing in on Vince McMahon. You're probably going to get burnt out on it, to be honest. A lot of the fans here, you're going to get burnt out on the Vince stuff. It's just too much going on. As the stock is at $86 or $87, whatever it is now. So, you know, obviously the news struck pretty well with WWE, but let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. Lavi, what do you got?
Biggest announcement. This is a business podcast. Join us on LinkedIn. The LinkedIn group, the business of the business, in parentheses, pro wrestling. So that's us. We have some pro wrestling executives there already, some names that you recognize. Come on in, join the conversation, get the news.
Nice. Of course, you could go to Pro Wrestling Tees, get a Middle Kingdom Wrestling shirt, get on there, and now go to Manscaped, manscaped.com. Use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z, get 20% off and free shipping as well. So thank you to Manscaped for jumping back on board with us.
Welcome. Welcome back. And the summer isn't too far away, so it's time to get ready.
All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little business of the business. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.